Good afternoon, wealthy web writers, and welcome to our reality blog update. I'm glad that you're all here. I'm Heather Robson, managing editor of Wealthy Web Writer. And of course, since it is a reality blog update, we have Wealthy Web Writer's reality blogger with us, Susanna Fitzgerald. Susanna, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hi, Heather. Hi, everyone.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I always look forward to our conversations about how things are going and kind of the bigger lessons that you are learning as a working writer. So I just kind of want to kick off, you know, this is your second year as our reality blogger. And I'm just curious, what have these first 2 months, how have they been different than your first 2 months last year when you were just starting? As our reality blogger, what's changed? What's new? What's different? What's exciting? What's challenging? All that good stuff.
I would say the biggest thing that's changed is my energy levels, my enthusiasm. And I think probably a lot of that is due to sustained, to more developed confidence. Mm-hmm. I guess I came into the first year of Wealthy Web Writer reality blogging with this kind of like, do or die mindset, like this was my one big chance to make it finally, you know, make things better, get things going right. And this year it's like, I feel like, you know, it'll end when it ends and I'll be okay with that because I've enjoyed it. It's been a great job. And now I have the skills, the confidence, the testimonials to continue building on it. You know, it's like last year it was all about reality blogging and this year it's all about my life and my business. And excellent. It's a better mindset to be in personally.
Yeah. And I think you touch on something that a lot of writers experience, that make or break mindset that, you know, this is the thing. And if I get this right, everything's going to be okay. But man, if I don't, I'm never going to make it as a writer. And I know I went through that thinking several times when I was first getting started as a writer. It's a lot of pressure to put on yourself to be thinking, oh, everything rides on this one thing. And I know for me, one of the big changes, and I feel like multiple experts had to kind of beat this into my head, Elise Beenan being one of them, Marcella Allison being one of them, that you have to detach from the outcome when you're looking at getting clients, that you can't look at any client as this is the one I have to land. You just look at it as, hey, I'm going to have a conversation with this person. I'm going to see how it goes. Maybe it'll be a good fit. Maybe it'll be amazing. Maybe it won't go anywhere. So I'm wondering if you have found that to be true as well, and what it was like when you started noticing, if that has been true, that you weren't quite so like grasping so hard when you go into client conversations.
I think it has been true. That's the first thing. It was very true. And it's not like you don't know better. Like, I mean, when I won my first spec challenge at boot camp, that was my first make or break moment. Like I had literally said coming into boot camp, if I don't win something or get a client, I'm quitting. I'm no longer going to be a copywriter. I was so frustrated. And so it's like with a reality blogger, I mentally knew better than to put all my eggs in one emotional basket. But it's just something that I think you have to practice as much as you have to understand it mentally is half the battle. Learning it is something else entirely. But I think the biggest difference when I'm approaching clients with this mindset that they're not the be-all and end-all, they are important and I do care about them and I do want to help them, is it's more attractive, I think. It's mm-hmm. like the Dan Kennedy approach, the magnetic marketing attraction marketing, engagement marketing. And that has always been the model that I'm most comfortable with and that I seem to get the best results with. And it's like that attitude going into a client meeting is much more attractive than mm-hmm. I do anything to help. Please let me help. You know, it's like, I think that was actually off-putting to people. And now mm-hmm. when I come into a call, like, I really do want to help you and I'm busy. So let's cut this off at the hour mark.
Right.
Is much more compelling and confidence boosting in them, I think. I'm getting much mm-hmm. more. I still get no's, but it's a more friendly no.
Yeah, well, you still get no's. And I know Russ Henneberry, who I work with in the SEO Mastery Program, early on, not early on, but when he kind of hit his stride and doing discovery calls and stuff, he was actually landing 80% of his clients. And one of his friends who had been in the business a little bit longer sat him down and said, you should not have an 80% close rate. That means you're not charging enough. You need to raise your rates. So you shouldn't have 100% close rate. If you're getting all yeses, it's time to boost those rates up a little bit. I think you make a really excellent point there when you talk about coming into the call with a, yes, I want to help you, but you know, I am busy. And so we're going to have to kind of do this a little bit on my terms and to my schedule. And of course, you want to be professional and polite about that. But one of the things that I have found over my career is most clients would like you to actually come in and say, okay, so, you know, what is it that you're trying to achieve? And I've looked at things. And as you say, that's what you're trying to achieve. Here's what I think we should do. And I think many writers come in and say, what would you like me to do? So have you made that shift with your clients where you kind of go in prepared with some of the things you think maybe they should be doing rather than asking them what they would like you to do?
I think I have. And I think I've still, so I wouldn't say I've made the change in the sense that I'm like starting every call the same way, which is what my goal is for this year. But some friends of mine from my peer review groups have very kindly let me practice on them. So I think my first part of the process is that discovery process. And I'm working right now on a lead gen document for my website and my newsletter sign up that would be the first step in that. So like, who are you? What do you want? What are your biggest roadblocks? So that when we go into that call, it's like you can chop off the first 30 to 40 minutes of the call and I can really focus in on helping them. Because that was the one big thing I pulled out of my conversations with my peer test buddies was that I was spending way too much time on the background details in the call and I could have come in a lot stronger. Okay. So I'm still making the transition, but I'm making it more every time.
Yeah. A couple times you've mentioned the word practice, and I think that is like for anybody listening to the call, if you took one thing away from this call that I think would really help you in moving forward, gaining momentum, being more successful, it's this idea of practicing. Because when you're practicing, no effort is wasted. Even if something doesn't work out the way that you would like it to work out, you're still learning. You're seeing how you can improve. And so, you know, if you start sending out pitches to clients and you're a little bit nervous about that and you don't quite know what to say, sometimes we get in this mindset, like somehow not just that client is going to know that we sent a pitch that didn't quite land, but they're like going to tell everybody on the internet. It's going to spread like wildfire, which doesn't happen. That's never happened to me. I've never talked to anybody that has happened to. So you just look at it as practice. It's like, I'm going to send out this pitch. I'm going to see what happens. And even if you're not getting feedback on it, other than, you know, a response or not a response, writing is one of those cool things where you get better at it just by doing it. And I think marketing is often that way as well. What do you think about that idea that everything is practice, it's not wasted?
I would say that the big thing for me about practice is just making sure that I'm not getting stuck in analysis paralysis, but I am actually doing practice that is moving me forward. So this whole month I have been updating my website and adding a newsletter and all this stuff, the kind of technical changes that scare me. So I have been avoiding it for way too long. It's embarrassing. But the thing that I did this time was like I did practice and I practiced again on my very kind peer review buddies. And I would be like, okay, I made an account on MailChimp. Would one person please sign on and tell me what's not working. And so then they sent me back this great feedback. You know, this is how the process looked from their end, which you can't always see with things like websites and newsletters. And then I changed it. The next day I changed it. And then I went on to peer review number two and I asked two people to sign up. And so it's like for the last two and a half weeks, I've been doing that. Like, would you check this? Would you sign up? You can unsubscribe from me later if you're not interested, but just please tell me what the process is like. Are you getting the emails? Take them out of the spam folder for me if you would so that Google starts to get the idea that I'm not a robot. And it's like, I love practice, and it makes you feel so much more confident, and it solidifies it in your mind so you're not stumbling and falling flat on your face in public, which is awkward. But I do like, for me especially, I have to make sure that what I'm practicing on is forward momentum, forward yeah. progress, not just like, ooh, I'm going to sit here and work on this document for the next 10 years and I'll be perfectly happy and make no money.
And that's a really good point. You do have to look at the actions that you're taking, the things that you're doing, the things that you're practicing, and evaluate them. You know, am I doing this so that I feel busy and safe, or am I actually doing something that is going to move me forward? And so DJ has a good question, and I'm going to go ahead and give my answer to it, but then I'd love to have you give your answer to it as well. So DJ says, what exactly does practice mean? Who do you send your writing to for feedback so you can improve? Who do you send the practice pages to? So in my mind, practice means, as a writer, a lot of different things. So it means writing every day. I think even if you don't ask people for feedback on your writing, the act of writing every day is a practice that you can get into that is going to improve your skills over time. Reading every day, I think, also is an important part of your writing practice. And I would definitely read blogs and experts who focus on the skills or the industry that you're looking at. But then I would also read fiction, because storytelling is so essential to our good writing. So to me, that is part of the practice. And then the third part of the practice is, well, actually, I'm going to go to four. So the third part of the practice is practicing marketing yourself. So that means practicing identifying potential clients by doing research on the web, practicing putting together an email or some form of first contact with that potential client and sending it to them. And every time you do that, you're going to kind of learn a little bit better what you're looking for. You're maybe going to refine what you're going to say to those potential clients. You might not land any of the first couple of dozen, but you'll get better and better just by doing it. So that's another part of practice. And then you mentioned the feedback component, which is also a really useful component. A couple ways that you can get feedback. I think Susanna identified a really good one, having a writer's group, or even a group of friends or family members who you trust to be kind, but also honestly critical, give you honest feedback on what you're doing. You can also post those to our Wealthy Web Writer Facebook group. If you've written something for practice that you'd like to get some input on, your peers there can give you that input. So there are a couple ways there. And DJ expands the question, I have no clients yet or contacts as I'm new to writing. Practicing developing contacts, just identifying what a good contact is, that's an art I'm still learning, and I'm, you know, 20 years into this ride. Sometimes I sit down and I think, ooh, this is a really great contact, and then I pause and I think, you know, what am I actually looking for? Does this actually match the criteria that I know work? And some of those criteria are they in an industry that I'm interested in? And then do they use already what it is that I want to write? Do they do content marketing? Do they do email marketing? If they don't already do those things, I don't want to educate them on the value of that. So I want to see that they're already doing it before I reach out to them. So Susanna, anything that you would totally disagree with or that you would build on in terms of that question about what we mean by practice?
I agree with what you said. It's all very important to reach out and to practice. And I like to think of it like one thing that Elise Bennon taught in her 21-day challenge that I found changed the whole tone of my business itself was to stop looking at it as like that make or break mindset, that absolute do or die last stand, and look at it as a laboratory experiment. And I realize, you know, when you're trying to define the word practice in terms of your writing, it's like, it's kind of like being a doctor or a lawyer. You know, they don't say that they are the be all and end all. It's called a practice. You have a lawyer practice, or you have a doctor practice, you have a copywriting practice. So in a way, everything falls under the heading of practice.
Right.
And I would say there's private practice, which is like I wake up every morning and I try to write something and I try not to worry if somebody's going to see it. Like, usually on Monday I write the rough draft of the reality blog, but I don't worry about if anyone's going to see it, because if I decide on Wednesday that I don't like it anymore, I can get rid of it. I still have time before my deadline. There's friends and family practice where, like, I'll often take a video or an article to my mom and say, would you read this and check it for typos? Or, like, taking stuff to my cop peer review group and saying, could you check this for errors? Give me feedback, all that good stuff. And then there is public practice, which is when you're reaching out to a client that you want to work with. It's when you publish something live to Facebook, LinkedIn, your website. So that's how I would define practice. And that way, everything is practice. And yeah, that kind of takes the nerve wrackingness out of it. And it's like, if it blows up in your face, clean up the lab and move on kind of thing.
And I like those layers that you have in there too. Practice for yourself, private practice, practice with your family, and then, you know, out in the world practice. And I think those are all, you know, that's how we build. Those are all important steps. And we get different kinds of feedback from each one, which help make us better. So you have been, let's see, your first 21-day challenge went really well. Your goal was to publish something every day, whether it was a post to LinkedIn or even a comment on somebody else's post on LinkedIn, and you exceeded that, got some good momentum going. You've been kind of alluding to some big things that you're going to start tackling, and I was wondering if you would be willing to talk about any of those during this interview.
Well, I actually can. Cool. I didn't want to give too much away because it does involve somebody else, but I'll give you the first public preview that we're doing here. You know, Linnell Swan, she's written several articles for you. Yes. We had connected before bootcamp, and then during bootcamp, we really, really synced, you know, like we're on very similar wavelengths. And so we are collaborating on a podcast.
Neat.
So that will be, we are practicing. We are friends and family practicing. We've been doing test calls and strategy calls and working out the details and who will do what and who's responsible for what and what we want to talk about. And we're going to keep doing that through March, because we do have quite a lot of details to work out. And it will be a very important marketing piece for both of us. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, in April, the podcast will go live and we'll start sharing it with the world. So
nice. That is
really
exciting. So may I ask what the focus of your podcast will be?
Mostly it's how to succeed without college.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. The big thing that Linnell and I have in common is that we both tried a semester of college and then we both went, this is not serving my goals, my needs, and we dropped out. And we found, well, in my case, I immediately found AWAI, and in her case, she found copywriting, and then a year later, she found AWAI. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we really want to get into this idea of you don't have to get six figures in debt to be successful at life. You don't have to spend time on campus if you don't want to. And, you know, if you do have debt, if you do have a degree that's not serving you, well, then you can get out from under it. You can make a new life without the college burden.
Excellent.
So that's where we're starting.
That is, that's really exciting. So my next question is, when you take on something like this, that's pretty new to you, I think you haven't done a podcast before. So there's a pretty good learning curve there, I would imagine. What is your strategy for tackling that learning curve?
So this is fun because we have been having strategy calls every once a week for the last 4 weeks, and we've been talking about it since last September. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into it, especially since we both want it to be very productive for us. So I would say the three big things we're doing is keeping it simple. We're just going to start at the very basic level and see how it goes and tweak it. You know, once we start our public practice, we'll do some tweaking and some pulling and change it up. Before, like, we're probably just going to publish to YouTube at first because that's the easiest video content. And then, you know, if we take off, if we get more confident, we'll try it on other more popular podcast sites and things like that. But we're just trying, like, we're trying to identify what would keep us from starting and avoid those things. So, like, trying to figure out all the tech behind a full podcast, like what you would see on, like, say, I don't know, the one that I hear about is Joe Rogan. So, you know, like way up at the very top of the podcasting, making millions of dollars a year, trying to figure that out is too much. So we're just starting as what we can handle without sacrificing our business. The other thing is being very honest and very purposeful with what we're doing. Like we talk a lot and we try to make sure we're on the same wavelengths, that we're planning the same things that we have. It's awkward because Linnell is in the Philippines and I'm here and it's like a 14-hour time difference. So we have to be really careful about our scheduling, things like that. And then just, you know, figuring out who can handle what end of it. So.
Excellent. So you mentioned that, you know, starting out, keeping it very simple, keeping it very basic. And I love how you put that, figuring out what it is that would keep you from actually starting and trying to, you know, avoid that. So I have coined the term on Wealthy Web Writer kitchen sink syndrome, which is something I suffer from.
Yes.
And maybe some of you suffer from it too. And this is when you start coming up with a plan for something. You've identified a goal that you want to achieve and you start coming up with the plan to achieve that goal. And you just keep adding things because obviously this other thing would also be helpful. And then this other thing would also be helpful. And then what about this other thing that could be helpful too? And so, you know, if you're growing your writing business, thinking about landing clients, suddenly you're like, I need to be on LinkedIn and I need to have a blog and I need to have, you know, a YouTube channel and I need to have an information packet and I need to be doing webinars and I need to be doing paid advertising on Facebook and I could go on and on and on. That's how my brain works. So so it's really, really important for me. Years ago, I encountered, I can't even remember who it was, who I was reading, who said, you have to start out with the bare minimum for success. Identify what the bare minimum is to launch successfully and then start expanding from there. And so I love that you guys are starting out with that very simple, let's just keep it basic. And I'm curious, did you guys come up with that strategy together? Has somebody influenced you on that front? How did you discover that bit of wisdom to go with the basic?
So I think both of us had received it from different angles. So in the summer I did a free webinar series that was focused on how to do the packaging deals, which I then wrote the blogs on. And in it, he had talked about that exact same concept, the MVP, the minimum viable presentation format. And that's like, he said he'd seen people go from $0 to $10,000 a month just using a 3-minute intro video and a link to schedule a call button. And he had screenshots because he's very good. He goes, this is what it looked like day one. This is what it looks like now, year 3, year 5, year 10. You know, it grows. And that helped me with that whole, this is a lab. You starting at square one and don't try to pile everything onto square one, but space it out a little bit.
Right.
And so I had kind of come into that concept when Linnell and I started talking about how much we had in common and how much we enjoyed talking to each other. And it was like, I kind of had in the back of my mind that I wanted to make sure that we kept keep it simple because I know this about myself, that I have kitchen sink syndrome and I want to do everything all at once. And I really wanted to start working on my focus because I think that's where I struggle the most personally. Mm-hmm. And she had reached out to some of her contacts and had asked them for advice. Like there's a couple that she knows that do their own podcasts and started out and are like a year or two ahead of us now. And so she came back on the same call with this thing. We need to keep it simple. We've got to trim it down. It's like, yes, we want to build this huge, fantastic, wonderful podcast and it's so much fun, but we're just starting and we've got to focus and what's going to keep us from succeeding. So we had received that guidance from two separate sources at two different times, and it worked together very well, thank goodness.
Very good, very good. Well, I'm excited for you both. I think that is a neat thing that you're undertaking, and I'm really looking forward to checking it out when it goes live. So my next question for you, I know you have some big plans for the year overall, including podcasts, growing your business. One of the things that I know can be a challenge for writers, or I think for anybody who is running their own business, is, you know, obstacles come up and setbacks come up. So what have you been doing this year, if anything, to anticipate potential obstacles and have kind of a plan in place to sidestep them or to get through them quickly if they do come up?
So I think I've been doing, or I did do a lot of work last year. I didn't plan on it, but it happened, was a lot of introspective personality study, because I kept running into problems, like kind of like how I did the reality, the challenges in the first place, was I structured them as I came up on them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the last 2 days of February, I would be planning my strategy for March. And then middle of March, I would run into an obstacle and I would try to figure out how to handle that on the fly. Mm-hmm. And so last call, you challenged me to think ahead a little bit. And mm-hmm. I have been trying to do that. And so looking back on it, I have identified a number of weaknesses, places where I'm not naturally talented or naturally strong, that are absolutely vital to my business, like focus, like trimming mm-hmm. it down, actually one of the things that I struggle with, that paralysis analysis, it comes from that fear of publicly failing. And so it's like, I heard you talk earlier this year, and I read it in a bunch of places, about choosing one word to mm-hmm. define your year. And so I chose the term freedom action. And it's like, freedom for me is the writer's life, the ability to go where I want, do what I want, live life on my own terms as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And so take action to achieve freedom.
Nice.
So it's like, no more hiding in the closet, no more planning for the future. Take a freedom action right now, today. Mm-hmm. And that has really helped me to be motivated. And it's also ironically helped me to look ahead and look at problems that could stop me. So, you know, for me, one thing is always health. I will probably always struggle with keeping my health at an optimum level. And so I have decided that I'm going to try more of a one-off approach to my monthly challenges. So January I took a little bit easier, because I knew from experience that January is a lot of technical work for me. Mm-hmm. I got to get the taxes ready, and I got to refresh all my business licenses and everything. So I took it a little bit easier. And then February I took it really hard. I mm-hmm. had four big goals, you know, the newsletter, figuring out the podcast formatting, revamping my website, and YouTube, starting yeah. to put videos onto YouTube, which are all huge tasks. And I decided to do them all at once, because they all are interrelated. And I needed mm-hmm. like, I needed elements from the newsletter to go on the website. I needed the website so I could put up the newsletter, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then in March, I'm going to back off and take it a little bit easier again, and give my body, because I've had zero time off in right. February. Which is okay, because it's winter and there's nothing much to do. But, you know, it's like 9-hour days, 5 days a week, all the time. And it mm-hmm. does get very tiring. And so March, I'm going to back off and do more of a challenge like I did in January, and try to, like, so I don't have to work so long, and I can finish up with whatever I didn't get done in February, keep working on the technical details, and you know, just generally back off. And then in April, again, I'm hoping to hit something very mm-hmm. challenging, like the podcast, and probably something else really hard, and just give it 110%.
Yeah. I love that, that approach to, you know, building your business, you know, really leaning into it, and then giving yourself some time to rest, reflect, recover. You know, you still do a little bit during that time, but we live in such a productivity focused culture that it can be hard to feel like it's okay to be like, so I did 9-hour days every day for a month. Now I'm going to back off. I'm going to do 6-hour days every day for a month, and to feel okay about that. So I laud you on that. I think that's great that you're kind of identifying your own natural energy cycles and using them to your advantage. I think that's really smart. All right. So at this point in the year, and for our newer writers who maybe are still working on landing those clients, do you have any advice that you'd like to share with them?
For landing clients, for
landing clients, for building business, for general success, fulfillment, rewarding writing career, whatever is on your mind that you wish somebody had told you when you were just starting out.
Well, I will say the one biggest change that I've made this year was I wrote an article on it, and I'm calling it my micro success, my business push-up challenge. And instead of like, if the 21-day challenge model doesn't work for you, if the big picture goal doesn't work for you, whatever it is that about other people's goal setting abilities that don't work for you, this is one thing that I think you can start with, and I wish I had started with on day one. And that is, I happen to do it on January 1st, but the idea is to start with doing one thing every day that will drive success. And then do that every day for the month of January. And then in February, do two things every day that will drive success. And, you know, so on and so forth. I'm not 100% sure about December yet. I'm not sure how I'm going to do 12 success things a day. But it's kind of like actually doing push-ups. You get stronger faster than you think. And, like, I have been writing them down in a journal every day so I can remember that I'm doing it and I show up. And I wrote down five things for yesterday.
Nice.
So it is actually building up faster than I thought it would. So maybe 12 isn't insane.
Isn't absolutely impossible. It all depends on how long your success actions take. I mean, if they take an hour each, that's going to be a big chunk of time.
And I'm also finding, like, in January, I would take one big thing. Like if I was writing a blog, that would be the whole success action. Mm-hmm. And then now in February, when I have to be a little bit more focused, it might be writing the rough draft for the blog is good enough. And taking pictures for the blog is good enough as a success action, because it is an action that drives success, and success drives freedom. And it's been really helpful for me on the back end. It's not just productivity out, it's confidence inward, in that I think I'm building a success mindset. Like it helps me to identify, like, this action can go in the success journal. Like if I'm playing solitaire, which I do sometimes, that isn't a success action. I can't write it down. It's embarrassing. So, you know, but it's like, if I answered an email late when I was tired and I didn't really feel like it, but I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to lose this person if I don't push it out and send them an answer right now, that's a success action. And that can go in the book. It may be very small, but it's worthy of writing down. And so it's like, it helps me to identify beforehand what is going to drive success. And it's helping me to plan out my challenges better, because now I have a better feel for what I would classify as success.
Nice. All right. Well, I want to invite you to turn the tables on me. Is there anything that you would like to ask me at this point? I didn't tell you I was going to do that. So you don't.
No, you didn't. So
me putting you on
blank,
the spot.
Blank brain. Well, I guess one of the questions that I would ask that I haven't ever thought to ask you before would be, what scared you the most about starting copywriting when you did? Like what was that for you that's, and how did you build up from that point?
Right. So I have a pathological need to be liked. And so for me, the notion of being rejected or ignored was really, really difficult in the beginning. So every message that I sent out, every call that I made, was something that I kind of had to, like, build myself up to, because I knew, you know, just based on numbers game, I could rationally see, you know, this isn't a personal thing. It's not that they don't like me. It's just that they're busy or they don't need my services or whatever. So I had to practice a lot, kind of working myself up to hitting that send button, to writing the message, to identifying the potential client and reaching out and seeing what happened, and to not let the, all the messages that you send out that, you know, don't even get a no, they just get no, no response at all, which happens a lot, and it's totally okay. But in the beginning, that was always just a little teeny tiny bit devastating to me. And I didn't get a response back. So that, I think, was probably the hardest part for me, is just recognizing, you know, you're going to reach out to people who are not going to have a need for what you do, who are potentially going to be busy and feel like you're interrupting them. And so they may sound a little bit annoyed with you. And that, yeah, that was scary. That was really uncomfortable. But I also recognized that in order to grow a business, you have to have clients. And in order to have clients, you have to make connections. And in order to make connections, you have to introduce yourself to people and see where it goes. And I was very lucky. I was very blessed. I was pretty good at my timing when I first started out. And so I probably got way more yeses than was fair in terms of, you know, the numbers game, and that did help me a lot. But yeah, for anybody that's out there that's kind of feeling like, oh, you know, this is so hard, to reach out to somebody and have them say, no, you have a couple of options. You can do what I did, which is just, you know, kind of find a little routine that, you know, gets you like amped up and pumped up and ready to do it and willing to do it and just keep doing it. Or you can slow down and you can choose marketing methods that take a little bit more time to convert, but are all about getting people to contact you. So this is things like being a thought leader on LinkedIn, publishing a blog on your site, publishing in trade publications, using services like Meetup to do either virtual or live events where you are teaching what you know, and you only have to know a little bit more than the people that you are teaching to offer a lot of value. So these are all ways where if you're nodding along with me thinking, yeah, I hate that idea of being ignored or rejected when I market myself, these are all ways that you can market yourself where you're not directly asking one person, hey, do you have a need for a freelance writer? And I would love to work with you, and seeing where it goes from there. These are ways of putting your expertise out there, growing your reputation, demonstrating authority, and letting the contacts come to you. Barbara says, I feel that, Heather. Yep. And, you know, there's definitely room. I know a lot of writers that are very extroverted. I know a lot of writers that are very introverted. I have a quirk where if I'm in a room of introverts, I behave like an extrovert. If I'm in a room of extroverts, I behave like an introvert. I don't know what that is, but that's how I do things. But we kind of sometimes, I know a lot of us are introverts when it comes to writing. And so I just want to encourage you, there are definitely methods that you can use that allow you to make those deeper connections with people, which introverts usually aren't averse to. It's the small talk and the you know, putting a bunch of messages out there that feel kind of meaningless that gets a little bit draining. So think about, you know, who you are, how you like to meet people, what gets you excited, and find the marketing methods and the ways of making connections that kind of fit with your personality. If I were to go back and do it again, I would do it differently in that way. I would start a blog right out of the gate. I would try to, you know, just detach from the idea of how many readers I had at the beginning. I would publish regularly. And then I would really share stuff to social media that I thought was interesting. And then when people connected with me, I would just start conversations with them and look at it as a chance to get to know them, not even necessarily to do business with them. And I think that that is a genuine way to build a lot of momentum. All right. Any other questions for me, Suzanne?
Well, I was just looking at DJ's question that she had posted earlier, and I realized I don't think we answered her question of how do you, like, I think part of the question was how do I get clients or contacts so I can practice marketing myself.
Gotcha.
And I don't think we addressed that part of it thinking back on it. So I was thinking my method when I got started was to reach out to safe AWAI people that I knew were going to say yes. And it started on Facebook. I would probably recommend starting on LinkedIn because Facebook has dropped off in terms of interaction in my perspective. And LinkedIn has really ramped up, especially professionally. Mm-hmm. But I would reach out to Josh Boswell, Steve Maurer, you, Jen Adams, anyone I knew from the world of AWAI, and I would just send them a connection request with kind of like, hi, I'm new to AWAI family. I saw you on da-da-da. I would love to connect. And I didn't get one no from people like that. And I have never given one no to people like that. Like after boot camp, I had LinkedIn connections saying, hey, I saw you in the chat and I heard you on this and I saw your articles on Wealthy Web Writer. And I have never said no. I always say, how can I help you? Because I remember that feeling of being right. Alone and scared. And so that's how I would recommend starting to build up a client network base. And especially I found LinkedIn to be more valuable to me long term. But how would you do it? Like like, is that something that you would recommend or?
Yes, definitely. I think LinkedIn is a great place. One of the things that I would really do on LinkedIn is be thinking about, you know, who it is that you want to work with, because the number of potential clients in the world is just vast. So vast. So whenever you encounter a company through advertising or, you know, something on YouTube or through social media, or maybe you're at a webinar and a company is sponsoring it. One of the things that I would do is go over to LinkedIn and find that person and say, you know, hey, I was at your webinar. And I'd love to connect. I have not gotten a lot of no's with that. I do want to say, if you connect with me, be patient. I'm very sporadic in my LinkedIn use. And so I will say yes, but it might take me a little time just because I haven't seen it yet, because I haven't been over there. But yeah, LinkedIn, I think, is really, really valuable. I also recognize that sometimes we're in situations when we're coming to writing where we've maybe been thinking, hey, sometime in the future, I'd love to be a writer. And then circumstances happen and suddenly we're faced with, like, I need to be earning some money. I need to be earning some money now. I'm not sure how to go about doing that. So I'm going to do that through writing. And so in that situation, we want to land clients faster, and we don't necessarily have time for this slow burn strategy that I'm talking about, where you have a blog and you publish to LinkedIn and you have all these wonderful conversations that are super, super low pressure. If you are in this situation where it's like, I need clients and I need them now, one of the things that you can do is really look within your community locally and check in your newspaper, see what companies are doing. You know, are they sponsoring events? Are they raising funds? Are they launching new products? Are they opening new locations? Are they forming new partnerships? Check their websites, check what's going on in your local newspaper. And when you find somebody that does have something like that going on, that's a good door opener. So what I do, I use postal mail in this situation because it tends to be more disruptive. People are much more likely to open a letter than they are to open an email from somebody that they don't know. Not saying they don't open those emails, but, you know, they are more likely to open the letter. And I will just say, hey, you know, I saw in the newspaper that this cool thing is happening for you. Generally, when cool things are happening for companies, they need more writing because they have to communicate about the cool thing that's happening. So maybe they need case studies. Maybe they need white papers. Maybe they need email blasts. Maybe they need social media posts. Who knows what they need? But I will say, you know, congratulations. I think that's really great. I recognize this is probably an extra busy time for you. This is what I do, and maybe I can help. Give me a call. Send me an email if you'd like to talk. And I get a really high response rate from that because I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I'm not just sending the email or the letter at any time. I'm saying, hey, I bet you're busy and you probably need some help. And that, just that recognition, you know, that helps them feel seen. It helps them feel heard. It also plays into synchronicity, where, is it synchronicity or serendipity? I always get those two mixed up. Anyway, we're all superstitious on some level. And so when I come in at the moment that they're looking at everything that they need to get done and they're thinking, how am I going to get this all done? And I say, hey, I bet you have a lot going on. Would you like some help with that? They don't go looking for another writer. As far as they're concerned, the universe just handed them me and I'm the one that they're supposed to work with. So that is how I, if I need to land clients quickly, if I find myself in that situation, that is how I go about doing that in a proactive way.
Oh, that's so helpful. And I know, like, I've seen, actually thinking back on it, I've seen a couple of opportunities in my community where I could have said that. And then I paralysis analysis again. And it's like, I spent all summer going to our local dirt track racetrack because it was a lot of fun. And they kept saying that they were having trouble, like, bring a friend, you know, they're kind of having trouble with their marketing. Mm-hmm. And now that promoter's moved on and the opportunity is closed up. And I can't, hearing you say it, I'm like, what would have happened if I had just, you know, tagged them on Facebook and said, hey, do you need help getting people to come to your events?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's like, I have a tendency to see a good opportunity and identify it. And then I'm like, oh, let me think about it for a week and 10 days and 2 months. And oh, look, it's closed now.
Right.
So right. I have to watch that, but That's a brilliant strategy.
Yeah. Another thing that you can do with job boards, I'm always leery of job boards. They can be super useful, but you also know that they're going to be really competitive because, say, they're putting money behind advertising this position. But I do watch job boards carefully for companies that put out posts for freelancers, and I will add them to my list of potential contacts because now I know that company works with freelancers. So that immediately removes a barrier. I don't have to go in and kind of do that initial filtering. Do you ever work with freelancers? I can just come in knowing that, yes, I've seen it. I know you work with freelancers. And so that is another way to kind of build that list, is you can look at job boards and you don't even have to go with the specific job that's being posted. Like if somebody is posting for a social media manager and they're looking for a freelancer, but you do email marketing, you do know that they're open to freelancers. So now you can figure out through LinkedIn usually, you know, who works at that company in marketing. And then you can reach out to them through email, through post, and say, hey, I'm a copywriter. I specialize in email marketing, short promotional emails, welcome series, fulfillment message series, newsletters. These are all things that I do. I'm wondering how you're set for, you know, writers to handle that stuff for you. And if you have a need, maybe we should talk. And so you already know that at the very least, they're open to freelancers. Maybe they don't have a need at the moment. That's okay. The other thing I would emphasize is name recognition is really important. So even if you're doing some of these faster strategies that I'm talking about, don't not do the slower strategies as well. Start identifying people that you think it would be just great to be connected with, maybe to work with, but great to be connected with. And talk to them through LinkedIn and through email, comment on their posts, send them messages asking how they're doing, what they're up to, or just saying, hey, you know, I really enjoyed this thing that you wrote the other day. It you know, made me think this, and thanks. After a while, they start to recognize your name. And once they recognize your name, they will open your messages. And Susanna mentioned bootcamp and participating in the comments there. When you go to virtual events, make sure that you actually put in your full name when you register, when you log into the webinar, that you put in your full name, and then ask good questions, make thoughtful comments, and a lot of people will start to gain some name recognition. I've had a number of people who, when they reach out to me with an article idea, I'm like, name's really familiar. Why do I know that name? Well, it's because I was interacting with them over on Facebook or over on LinkedIn, or I saw them saying a number of things in comments here in a Wealthy Web Writer event. I'm always going to open that message because I feel like I know who you are. And so definitely don't discount name recognition. It's very valuable, definitely worthwhile building that up.
Yeah. I would say I've been thinking actually for my next, for March's challenge, because I do want to take things a little bit slower, that I've been thinking of a sort of a balance between a fast hard push for clients and the slower building strategy. And one thing that I am meaning to do is join up with that Writers Wanted job board. And I had some reservations about it because I've never had any success at job boards. That's just not my cup of tea. But I was thinking that what I'm going to do is, like you said, identify the companies that are looking for freelancers, that are open to working for freelancers. And rather than putting myself into a crowded market of competition where lower prices might beat out more experienced quality or whatever the issue is, I was thinking of following them over on LinkedIn, which is my favorite place right now, and like trying to connect with some of the executives, some of the sales managers, and then doing that posting and commenting and tagging them and, you know, interacting. And then maybe 2 or 3 months down the road, when they've probably used up that opportunity that they had opened with, maybe saying like, hey, what are you thinking now? Like, do you need consulting work? How was your success with that? So that would be kind of my balance between fast and slow.
Excellent. Love that. All right. Well, we are kind of coming up to the end of our session. Any final questions or thoughts?
Oh, boy. I guess I would ask you one thing that just came into my head was, how many times or have you changed your big goals? Like when I started with the reality blog, my goal was to help my parents get their retirement home. Mm-hmm. And this year coming into it, it's like that's still a goal for me, but I've realized that there's an obstacle to that in themselves, and they're kind of like hesitant to it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking that maybe instead of like actually doing it, what I want to change my goal to a little bit would be make it so that they know it's a possibility. Like right. If they're ready, when they find a place, when they feel comfortable, that's something that is open for them rather than just settle the whole situation out of hand. And I was wondering, do you change your big goals like that? Is that advisable?
Yeah. Things come up. I'm a big proponent of regular introspection where you pause and think, what is it that I want? What is it that's missing from where I'm at? What would fill that? I've had this goal of launching a specific website that I've stalled out on several times. And finally, with my accountability partner, he just asked me, he's like, what do you actually want to be different in your life than what's there right now? And I realized I'm actually really happy with where I'm at right now. I'm enjoying the work that I'm doing. I'm making the money that I want to be making. I have the freedom that I want to be having. And so that kind of helped me see, okay, so I've set this goal kind of for the sake of setting a goal. I try once a quarter to just sit down and think, what's missing? What would I like to be different? What would I like to add? What would I like to take away? I'm really bad at the taking away part. I'm really bad at letting things go. So that's something I'm working on, is really recognizing, why am I still doing things? And am I doing them because they bring me joy? Am I doing them out of a sense of obligation? Am I doing them out of a sense of just fear? Fear of letting them go, fear of the next person who takes them on, maybe being better than me or maybe not being as good as me. There's all this swirl of stuff that goes on when you do that. But I think it's important to pause and ask, is this goal still what I want? Does this goal still make sense for me? And to be really honest about it, not to use the process as a way to rationalize why you're not making the progress that you should be making, or that you had hoped to be making, or that you wanted to be making, but to really look at it and make sure that your goals still make sense for you. I do that probably in a small way, once a quarter. And then I haven't done it yet this year. I try to, in that week between Christmas and New Year's, to sit down and think, in 5 years, what do I want this all to look like? Like, what do I want to be doing? And then what do I need to do in order to build up to that 5 years? And is my 5 years this year different than my, what I had said was my 5 years from last year? And it does change. Like sometimes I just realize, yeah, I set that goal and kind of did some work toward it and realized I'm just not that excited about it. And it's okay. If it's not actually, I'm not obligated. The goal is between me and myself. If it's something that I really, really want, then I have to be honest with, if I'm not making progress, why? But if it turns out, I'd rather be doing this thing, I think it's okay to change gears.
Well, that's a relief to hear you say, because I think I get that way too. I get so attached to an idea that I have that I think I can do or that I think I should be doing. Like right. This goal, it's a worthy goal. It's a noble goal. It inspires me. Is it practical? Maybe not as much as I thought it was. Maybe it needed some tweaking. And so it's like, it's nice to hear that it's okay to just let off a little bit.
Yep. Absolutely okay to redirect. I also sometimes, I mentioned the kitchen sink syndrome. I sometimes just get too big and then that gets really, really overwhelming. And so I have to come in and be like, okay, so here's the goal. What's the smallest piece of this goal that I'm going to do over the next 3 months? Like, not even going to think about all of it, but just the next 3 months, what am I going to do for that goal? And just scale it back so it's actually manageable with the rest of my life. So DJ does have a question coming in. I have not posted a resume because of the lack of clients, and everyone I have looked at wants 2 years experience. My goal for this year is to repay all my courses and make some good contacts. Okay, so you mentioned the 2 years experience when you, so we're looking at job boards, I presume. Correct me if I'm wrong, BJ. And you haven't put your resume up on any of these job boards because you don't have any clients. So a couple things to think about in terms, I'm going to give you three things to think about in terms of the job board. For a resume, if you have not client history, but you have work history, think about the things that you did in your work history that were writing related, that were marketing related, and that produced results. Highlight those accomplishments in your resume. So it won't say work experience or client experience. It will say, you know, notable accomplishments or something to that effect. And you say, do you say none, you don't have any work experience, or none, you can't think of any notable accomplishments? Because I'm going to say, if you have work experience, I've had this experience with both of my kids as they were getting into college. They come to me and they say they want a resume, and I've got nothing that I can put in the resume. And I sit down with them and I'm like, okay, let's figure this out. And generally speaking, they have a ton of things that they have done. So you say health field only, no writing. That's okay. There's probably communicating in the health field between you and other people. So just really think about the things that you did in the health field and how you can reframe them through a lens that might be useful. So that's if you want to have a resume to post. My next thing is, you don't have to have a resume to post. You don't actually have to. So if that is troubling you or that's a barrier for you, let that go for now. You don't have to have a resume to post. So they say they want 2 years of experience. That is a human resources person who is coming onto the job board. It's their job to post the need for the job, and they're just ticking boxes most of the time. If you can make a good case, say it's a company in the health field, if you can come in and say, hey, I happen to really know your audience because I've worked in this field for X number of years, and I noticed you're doing, you know, you have a need for this and that and the other thing, I'd love to help you. Let's talk about that. So now you're focusing on relevant experience, but not that 2 years of experience. Also, you can just come in and say, you know, yeah, I've got not 2 years of experience, but here's why I think I would be a great fit. So don't let the 2 years of experience or whatever they put in, the criteria they put in there, be a barrier. Unless they say no freelancers and you're looking for a freelance position, then don't waste your time. Don't waste their time. So those are the first two things. And then my third thing is, keep in mind, you don't actually have to go after the jobs that they've posted. If you see that they use freelancers, you can connect with them through a different channel, and just talk with them about, you know, maybe they need some help with their blog. Maybe they need some help with their email messages. Maybe you love social media and you'd like to write their social media posts. So just kind of take a minute, look at their site, see what they're doing well. Make a note of it so you can compliment on them on it, and then see what maybe they aren't doing that they could be doing that you could help with, and then make that suggestion to them. Are you going to land the first one on that? Maybe, but also maybe not. You're probably going to land somewhere between 1 and 3 out of 100 with that strategy. So it is a numbers game. But that does mean, you know, if you find 100 of these companies over the next month and you send out that kind of pitch, chances are by the end of the month, you will have at least a client. Can't guarantee it, but can't hurt to try. And it is good practice.
Yes. And I would say, if I may, I started that way. I had zero work experience outside of my home when I started. I had no experience. And I think a lot of potential clients, when they're looking for a freelancer, they put in 2 years experience because it's the thing to do.
Right.
Like, I kind of got that feeling like maybe there's a field that says, what are you looking for in terms of experience? Or maybe that's just what they copy pasted. Mm-hmm. But it seems like if you can pitch yourself well enough, if you can sell yourself, copyright yourself well enough, they aren't as attached to that as it looks like in black and white. Right. And so it used to scare me, and sooner or later I would just be honest. I would say, I don't have 2 years of experience. I can help you. And I never actually got someone telling me, you loser, didn't you read my pitch? So, you know, some of that's just hanging on to it. And other things are, be creative with it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a site audit specialist, you don't need 2 years of experience because you're selling them help. And like, I found that if you can get someone to interview you as a writer on Zoom and save the Zoom call and then clip out the good bits, you can use that as a really unique resume. So try to keep out of the box would be my opinion. If that's your challenge, get out of their box and put them into your box. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I love so Neil Patel, way back in the day when he was just getting started, used to do critiques of websites unsolicited, and he would do them in video. So he would pull their video up on screen and he would, you know, say, hey, I love your, you know, this and that and the other thing, but you really should change this and you should change that. And then he would put that on YouTube privately. So it was a private link. So it wasn't getting indexed and only he could see it. But then he'd send the link to the person and just say, hey, I thought you might appreciate my thoughts on how you might improve your homepage. Really risky strategy, because you do run the risk of actually, you know, putting some people off there. But we look at him today, and I mean, he's very dominant in our industry, and highly successful. So yeah, I love what you said about be creative. There are a lot of different ways that you can approach these clients. So find the way that, you know, you're kind of excited about, get out of their box, put yourself, you know, pull them into your box, and use those job boards as a resource. But don't let them, you know, put blinkers on you. There's a lot of different ways that you can use them. All right. Well, Susanna, thank you so much. This was a great hour. Really enjoyed talking to you. I think you shared a lot of valuable information. For all of our live listeners, thank you so much for being with us today. If you happen to be listening to this as a recording and you have questions for Susanna or I, just put those right down in the comments. We will see them and give you answers. And on that note, I'm just going to say, I hope everybody has a fantastic Friday tomorrow and a great weekend. Susanna, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. It was great.